On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
Ball blasted to right. Hunter back to the wall. And he makes the catch and crashes into the fence. Mauer with a great stop. Gets the lead runner at second. Joel Mauer with a fantastic play diving to his right. 1-2 to the Twins right fielder. And the bird goes to the backstop. And Vargas will score. Got him. Cut the plate in half with a fastball. And the Twins win a 1-0 ball game and have won the first two games of this series.
Since when has dirt become in the burt? Welcome to the On Deck Radio Show. David Helmer, it feels almost wrong in here. It's just you and I in the studio this week.
A little lonely in there.
Well, yeah, a little bit. We don't have that energy.
We'll bring it.
Okay, listen, we're using technology. Both guys on location. We got Al Newman ensconced in his life vest, ready to go fishing.
Wait a minute. I'm on the deck. In a life jacket. I'm nowhere near the water. Let's get that straight.
I love it.
Life preserver in tow. He's tying
his own line right now.
But you're at your cabin, Al, right? Because you're not going to have any weekends to be able to do that with the Alexandria Club, correct?
Yep. You know, me and the Belanger boys and a school teacher from the area, we're all up here for the fishing opener, put the dock in. Yep. This will probably be my only opportunity until August to get up to the cabin.
Northern Wisconsin, where are you?
Birchwood, yep.
Okay, perfect. And Gene Larkin is strolling about 40 in the slow lane up to Collegeville.
West, my friend, heading to Collegeville for senior day at St. John's, where we play the Gusties in the last weekend of MIAC play right now. I know the people want to know the MIAC history right now, so I'll give it to them. St. John's in second place behind Bethel. If they split today, they'll be probably the second seed in the MIAC playoffs.
That's Brian Robbie's.
Correct. Absolutely.
You know, in all seriousness, one of the things Gene and I, Al, were talking about earlier this week was about, you know, not a lot of states have the level of Division III baseball that Minnesota does. It's an incredible blessing for a lot of these high school players who are very good and have an opportunity to continue playing in their collegiate careers.
Most definitely. You know, when you talk to young players, you know, now the ones I train and some of these college guys that I use in the Northwoods League, you just ask for them to have an opportunity to play. If you have some skills, as Gino and I both know, everybody can't be a superstar. You have to have players that can play roles. And if you have an opportunity to play the game and develop what you're good at, you can succeed regardless of what level you play at in college.
I always tell kids, guys, that, you know, your window of opportunity to be an athlete is so, so small. Sometimes your career ends in high school, sometimes it ends in college, or you're fortunate enough to end in the professional ranks. So go to an area, go to a place that you can play pretty quickly. I know a lot of guys, if everybody wants to have the goal of playing Division I, but some of those kids don't get an opportunity to play until their senior year in Division I, where I say, well, would you rather play at a less of a baseball factory as a freshman or as a sophomore, get more at-bats, enjoy the game, or would you rather sit on the bench for 3 years? And it's Division I, but you're watching Division I. You're not really playing it yet. So I always tell people, you know, try to go to a place where you can play pretty quickly. I think you'll enjoy your 4 years in college a lot more.
Guys, I mean, everybody has the D1 aspirations, right? You'd love to be able to do that. And, you know, there is no such thing as a full ride, so let's just get that out there. So, you know, the reality of all that is, D3 is fine. You know, why would a player want to play D3? If you were to sell them on that, they play it because they love it, correct? I mean, why else?
Yeah, they love the sport and they want to get their education. And that should be the mindset from the get-go, is to get a degree, get your education, and play baseball. I think that takes a lot of pressure off of players if they're not thinking they're going to get to the major leagues. Instead, think of their future and let getting to the big leagues be a part of that if it happens, because those odds are a lot higher against you than you going ahead and getting that education.
So
you got four more years of baseball at a very competitive environment, and it's an environment that you can create success for yourself. I mean, that's what I always tell people. Why, you know, go to a Division I or a Division II school and just fight and not have any success, or sit on the bench? Where in Division III, yes, academics is very, very prominent, as it should be, but you have a good brand of baseball in the MIAC conference. You know, because of my son playing here the last 3 years, I've seen a lot of teams, good coaching and good players. And you got some guys from Division III the last few years that were drafted, especially from the pitching area, because they throw the ball very, very well. So you do have an opportunity if you're good enough. Let's face it, nowadays, it doesn't matter what level you play at. If you're good, you're going to get looked at by various scouts across the country.
So the fact is, you know, don't play for the end result. Play for the reasons that are right. You love the game. If you have talent, you get found, because it obviously always rises to the top. We know that. And you continue to play mostly because you love it. But one of the other things that Gene and I talked about was, you know, his son Gino is a senior. You said he's, you know, I said if you go to St. John's, if you go to St. Thomas, you go to Hamlin, Augsburg, Bethel, all these schools, the business community is so tight in the Twin Cities. They kind of stick together, and it's like a brotherhood. The job market is very good if you go to those schools and you get your education, and you're saying your son's already got an interview lined up and he's not even done.
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything else. We all know as parents and as adults that when you get out of school, it's about networking and your ability to meet different people in school, so that when your schooling is over, your academic career is over with, some doors will open up for you. So, yeah, sure. Definitely St. Thomas and all these MIAC schools have a great networking branch to them. And you know, as a parent, you want your kid to have an ability after he pays his $45,000 a year to go to school that he's going to have an opportunity to get a decent job in an industry that he wants to get into.
Al, what kind of players do you have that are on your Alexandria team? From where are they coming from? What colleges do you have kids from?
I've got a couple of kids from Coastal Carolina. I've got some from Texas A&M. I got a kid from Iowa, Ohio State. They're from all over the country, and I think the main proponent of this is I have quite a few freshmen, and you know that first year acclimation to the college life and playing sports. Obviously, a lot of these kids aren't playing, and again, they're at D1 programs. And just as Gino alluded to, they're not ready to play in this summer league. But then again, their college coaches want them to get that experience. Unfortunately, they're going to be behind the time because they weren't playing. So those kids, you know, you get from the big schools, the reason why they go play in such big numbers in the summer is because they go to these schools and they're not playing much during the season.
Now, there are these summer collegiate leagues peppered all over Canada and the United States. You know, there's obviously everybody knows about the Cape Cod League. That's the big known one. But there's the Pacific Coast Collegiate Baseball League. There's New England Perfect Game
there's
Baseball
Kansas
League.
State
there's
League. They're
yeah,
all over
the South Florida. I mean, you go. There's so many opportunities for these players to continue to play the game, and it's really, really good baseball. So if you're in the area of Alexandria, Andrew vacationing at the cabin, and I'm not getting anything for promoting this for tickets,
right.
but it would be great to be able to check out a game because it's really, really good baseball, and you draw good crowds, don't you?
Yeah, we get decent crowds, and I tell you what, the players are very good. They're learning the game, and by that I mean they're starting to play against better players, so you have to make adjustments to have success at those levels. You know, Gene and I both know from, you know, you go from college, you go to the minor league, that funnel effect takes hold, and you've got to get better or you're going to get left behind. So these guys are learning how to compete. I think it helps them in so many different areas of life. You learn how to adjust to people that you don't know in areas that you don't know. And you also sort of learn the responsibility of interacting with people who appreciate your skills.
On Deck Radio continues on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Great Saturday morning to everybody. I'd like to say hi to Chris, located in Hopkins, and MJ, listening on in, where is she, Cottage Grove? No, Maple Grove. No, I knew it was Maple Grove, just being funny. But thank you to all of our listeners for listening to the program. Guys, I saw a triple play yesterday.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was against your boys from Eden Prairie, Gene.
My boys.
Somebody, how did it occur?
To set it up, it was Eden Prairie against Hopkins. It was a thing of beauty. So you had a hit batsman and a walk, runners on first and second. The score at the time was 4-2. Nobody out, ready to blow this thing open. An absolute laser is hit down to the first base line it was one of those, it hooked right in and away. So he had to kind of move to his left to make the catch. Bang, looks over as the runner on first base is retreating back, quick tag. While he's tagging, he's transitioning to throwing at the same time, bang, bang at second. I have never, guys, there's a pretty good crowd there at Hopkins High School. I have never heard a high school baseball crowd cheer louder. And Gino, even the Eden Prairie parents were clapping. It was something you don't see like that bang, bang, bang that fast. It was awesome.
Okay, I'm going to play topper here. Gino, you were on the team, correct? 1989, when we turned two triple plays in one game.
He better have been.
No, that's amazing. It is amazing when young kids don't panic and they make plays on defense. And I'm sure it's a rally killer for sure, but it's also a very exciting time for the defensive team because they run off the field and more times than not they score that inning.
And they did. They hit a home run to make it 4-3. And then it ended that way, but it was a very entertaining high school baseball game. Well played.
Right.
No errors on either side. It was a very, very clean game. It was a lot of fun to watch. Guys, segment one's already over. Can you believe it?
Wow. Amazing.
We haven't gotten into Ricky Nolasco's return to the starting rotation. When we come back, we will, though, with Mike Berardino from the St. Paul Pioneer Press on Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. We welcome you back to the On Deck Radio Show. Gene Larkin en route to Senior Day at St. John's. By the way, I've got a spot open for the Hopkins Berries for Gino if he wants to join the lineup here. I'm not in charge of it, but is he going to do a little town team ball, Gene?
Yeah, I'm assuming he's going to. I don't think he's going to hang up the cleats forever, you know.
Maybe he'll be good enough to make that roster.
Oh,
Al Newman is in Wisconsin right now. Is it Birchwood, you said?
Birchwood, Wisconsin.
Absolutely. On the dock right now, getting ready to get the pontoon fired up to do a little bit of fishing.
Yeah, the guys are getting the deck put in, and I'm sitting up here doing
the
radio
show. He goes, hey,
I love it.
Pontoon, yeah. I'll sit back and watch you guys work.
Hey, by the way, we got to do our, we've got this new tradition that's starting with On Deck Radio, and we'd love to get your texts and notes if you're listening in. And we have a couple more hellos to say to. Hello to Nick and Edina and Charles Foster on iHeartRadio in Dickinson, North Dakota. Boy, I sounded like Harry having a couple Budweisers. but nonetheless, hello to Nick and Edina, Charles Foster, truly working iHeartRadio in Dickinson, North Dakota. He is working for, get this, I think he's working the oil fields.
Okay.
Would you blame him?
Nice.
Do you blame him?
That's the place to be from what I hear. You want some money in your pocket.
Well, I mean, yeah, you follow the gold, if you will, quote unquote. Let's bring in Mike Berardino from the St. Paul Pioneer Press. His work can also be seen online at twincities.com. And one of the best in the business joining us here today, Mike, the Twins, one game under 500. And winners of two big ones against the Chicago White Sox in two different fashions. First of all, thanks for joining us this morning, Mike, and your takes right now on how this team's playing at home.
Well, they've really done a nice job of moving past what could be crushing defeats. You think back to the home opener, even that left everybody kind of thought they were dead in the water at that point. It was a horrible first week. Well, they're 10-6 since then. And then Wednesday against Detroit at home, that was a game that you got to have. You're up 7-3. And Tim Stauffer comes in now on the DL, but gives up those two homers, and it spirals the wrong way. And they give up 7 unanswered, and you wonder where they're going to go from there. Well, they come back and beat Chris Sale, and then they have Gibson pitched probably the game of his career so far last night in a 1-0 win. And those are pretty rare, even with offense down.
Hey, Mike, L. Newman here. You mentioned Gibson throwing a beauty last night. I wanted to ask you about Pelfrey. You know, he's had two strong outings. Has he shown the leadership that the Twins thought he could you know, since he's been back in the rotation?
Well, I'll tell you, the leadership, the accountability, the responsibility, all those things that you thought you were buying when you were the Twins and Mike Pelfrey, that's been there even when the ERA was above
sure.
seven. That, I mean, the guy is tremendous in standing up and admitting when things are bad. What's been so different is, and what I really picked up on here these last two starts, is he's a little rusty on his post-win speech, his victory his victory analysis. He needs to sharpen that a little bit. He finds himself trying to apologize. I think he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, he's got to get back into the rhythm of success.
That's right. He hasn't broken down, you know, victories for very long, going back to 2013 before that great one in Kansas City, and then he follows that up against the Tigers. Mike Pelfrey is a big, strong guy who, when he's healthy, can just ride that sinker and make it a very long night for you. But the thing that's really elevated him is he's mixing the pitches. You guys see that. He's throwing the curveball,
yes.
the slower curveball more, and he's got a change that he's had.
He's using a slip finger a little bit,
yeah.
right?
Well, he's had it for the whole time he's been here. He had it with the Mets. He just never really trusted it nearly as much as he loves that sinker. But Eddie Guardado's out there in the bullpen, and he really implored him this spring and showed him how he got his split change working over the years. And Neil Allen loves the changeup. And so Pelf, you know, out of kind of admittedly at the crossroads of his career, said, I'm going to start throwing that thing more, and he's getting results.
Hi, Gene Larkin here. I want to stay with the pitching staff if we could. Tommy Malone got sent down last night, and I'm a little bit surprised about that. I realize his last two outings weren't real good, but his first two are very, very good. And not so much for the talent level, but now that the Twins are going in all right-handed starting rotation, and I even thought that if they were going to take him out of the rotation, they would move him to the pen. Are you surprised they sent him down completely?
Well, I think the fact that Dunce a little bit, and he certainly was, he didn't see that coming, but it makes sense, Gene, because Dunce coming off the DL, Theo Bar goes back down, but you have Aaron Thompson here doing very well, and then, of course, you have Perkins at the end. Well, that's three lefties in that bullpen. If you keep Tommy in long relief, that's poor. They don't really know that they'd use him that much in that role. Stauffer was used very lightly. They'd rather keep Tommy Malone sharp and ready and go down to AAA where they'll have four lefties in their rotation. And a couple are pretty good, especially Taylor Rogers. All of them are pretty good to some extent. So that is just purely to keep him in that frame of mind. Could he have been useful up here in long relief? Potentially, but you don't really want to have to use that guy in the sixth inning. You hope your starters are giving you six and seven, and lately they have. I think the larger question is, will Tommy Malone fix his command issues and be needed again up here before Alex Meyer takes that next step or Taylor Rogers takes that next step, and will they surpass him?
And then the wild card is Ricky Nolasco and his injury woes and his elbow issues, who starts today. I mean, by all accounts, do you think, Mike, that is he due for an outing to at least go into a quality start capacity here?
Well, he was pretty good in September, guys. I mean, when he was healthy, of course, there wasn't much at stake, but his ERA was under three in September
yeah.
in five starts. He looked good in the spring, but doesn't everybody. I was a little surprised that they didn't ask him to make that second rehab start and build up his pitch count with low stress down there in the minors. Cedar Rapids was home. He knows all the good restaurants in Cedar Rapids now after being on rehab for the last 2 years. He knows both of them. But I shouldn't say that. I'm sure they have plenty. But he was eager to get back, and the Twins are eager to pop him back in the rotation. He says he feels great. He credits Lanning Tucker, the rehab coordinator, again, to really make that elbow area feel the best it's ever been, to hear Ricky say it. So we'll see what comes out of his hand today, but mentally he's in a good place.
You know, can I get another one in, guys?
Go for it.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Mike, I wanted to ask you, kind of changing pace here. You've watched Molly here the first 20, 25 games of the season. When you look at that lineup, the composition of his lineup, do you think you like Santana at the bottom or leading off? I know myself personally, I sort of like the Dozier leadoff position just based off of it's an extra base hit if he gets a hit, and he does have the propensity to draw a walk.
I'm with you, Al. I think Dozier in particular likes it this way. You know, they've, you know, not too many guys can hit cleanup or first for you, and he's done both this year. But he likes, he's comfortable in that leadoff spot, seeing a lot of pitches, doing the things that traditionally you want your leadoff guy to do that Danny Santana's not really comfortable doing. He's a guy, first one he likes, he's gonna let it fly. And then that speed at the bottom, Dozier, we saw it just the other day, on Thursday, knocking Danny Santana in from first on a single to center, because Danny has that kind of speed element, tremendous speed, that was unleashed with the help of Gene Glynn in that instance. And I think we'll see more of that. I think Danny Santana at the nine spot, Jordan Schaefer going to be down there in front of him along with Robinson. Molly likes that speed at the bottom. He likes the experience at the top. And working pitchers and letting everybody else see what he's got. That's how it should work, and that's how it's been working lately.
Gino, you're still on.
You, real quick, guys, you just said something, and I think, you know, having been a third base coach, Gene Glynn stole that run.
Absolutely.
With the speed of Santana, and I was sitting out in the left field, and I watched that happen, and I got goosebumps as a third base coach because he kept the play going. And, man, I said, way to go, Gene, but everybody else probably was looking at the runner.
Isn't that always the way? No.
Yes, that's always the way. That's exactly what I said in left field.
Gino.
Well, they only know Gino's name when he gets somebody thrown out. Then it's his fault.
Yep.
But the nice thing is, I think he's shown already, he's done this a long time in multiple markets. He's one of the best third base coaches in baseball. He just hasn't been doing it lately. He's not afraid to get a guy thrown out because they want that aggressive mentality. Mulder wants that from the top. And if that continues, and guys, the speed guys are empowered, and even the guy, look at Kenny Vargas last night. Look at him beating you with his legs. I mean, that who would ever have thought that Kenny Vargas tagging up and then racing home with no hesitation on that wild pitch would be the difference in the game? But if that's the sort of thing you have to do when you're trying to get back to respectability, and I think people enjoy it. Yep.
Mike, I'm glad you brought up Vargas there, because he's a guy that I think is very, very vital for the offensive projection for this team, because he's the one guy from both sides of the plate can hit a ball a mile. He's off to a real, real slow start. Do you think they're going to be very, very patient with Kenny, or is it going to be a situation where they're going to try to pick their spots and maybe give him a day off more frequently?
I think they are being patient with him. They've been patient already. They like the way he worked through those 3 days that he had off. He stood in there in the bullpen sessions and tracked pitches. It's about pitch selection with him, just as it is with Santana and basically anybody. But the younger guys, it really shows up when they start to expand. And he was expanding. Two singles last night, two hits earlier when they came back in the lineup this week. He's feeling better up there, and it's tough for the switch hitters. And those two young switch hitters, I wrote about that earlier this year. That if Eddie Murray said it was tough to keep both swings in line throughout his career, imagine what it's like for these second-year guys who have to keep both swings sharp when you might go a period of time and not even see a lefty. They've been seeing lefties lately, and I
had trouble keeping mine sharp all the time. I couldn't hit from either side. What are you talking about?
It's the toughest thing to do in sports. And I think the main thing is he wasn't defeated by his struggles. He said, I went through slumps in the minors, and I figured my way out. And don't forget, guys, right before he got called up last year from Double-A, he was in like a 9-for-60. He was completely lost, but they liked the way he handled it. So I think they know that he can handle the failure. He won't get down on himself, and he'll keep working, and that's the way he gets through it.
Great stuff, Mike Berardino. I will see you on Monday. I will be away from the park for a couple of days. So happy viewing, and we appreciate your contributions, and we'll be talking to you in this same segment next week.
Thank you,
Mike.
Look forward to it. Enjoy it. Have a good day.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much. That's St. Paul Pioneer Press, Mike Berardino, TwinCities.com. You can find his work online as well. David Helmer here in the studio. Gene Larkin on the road. Al Newman on the deck. Ooh, how about that one? That's a pretty good one.
That works out well.
On Deck Radio. On Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. More Twins talk right after this. Jordan from Egan, hello to you as you listen on to the On Deck Radio Show. The notes keep coming in, guys. I guess this is actually being listened to.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's good. That's good. People want to know about the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I got another one. Sid from South St. Paul. Sid Thompson. So, yeah, they continue to pour in the listenership. We appreciate that. This show has been a lot of fun. We have a great segment here that we've come up with. It's five questions with Al Newman and Gene Larkin. Gene, you're going to be the leadoff batter here. Al, perfect. Grab the rosin. You're on deck.
Yes.
Okay. Will the Twins continue their push to the 500 mark or better through the month of May?
Oh, I believe so. I think they're getting better pitching now. It comes down to two things with me, guys. Pitching and defense, it's been stated for a million years regarding baseball. Their starting staff now has a little bit of stability. I think if they remain stable with the injury bug eliminated, they've got a pretty good chance. I do have a little worry about their defense, though. If that becomes more consistent, especially up the middle, Santana's off to a rocky start. I believe he's got about eight errors. And the center field situation is a little iffy, too. And Shane Robinson is playing very, very well. Probably getting a more playing time than I anticipated early in the year, but he's done very, very well. So as long as they start catching the ball a little bit more consistently and get more consistent starting pitching, I think 500 is very, very doable.
To jump on the Shane Robinson wagon for a minute, Al, before we go to you, hitting 341 on the year so far. He's 1-for-3 again yesterday, but has really shown a good propensity defensively in the outfield, both in left and center field. Been a nice pickup for the Twins. Al, your thoughts on that question?
Well, I'm more of a guy that I like what I saw last night. Take, for example, Torrey Hunter makes an outstanding play. Well, that's what I'm used to seeing in center field, the gap-to-gap coverage. And right now, he's doing very well out there, but I would rather have a guy that I know can put some numbers up offensively. I hate to try to compare him to guys like Kane in Kansas City, but that's the type of player that I see out there, an exciting player. And nothing against Mr. Robinson. He's a good player. He's always been a utility backup type player. I'd like to see us try to get, not bring in somebody, maybe hit again, to see if we can get that type of player out there in center field. Nothing against Mr. Robinson. He's taken an opportunity given to him as a bench backup type player, and he's done very well with it.
Hey, guys, did you see what happened to Jordan Schaefer in that game on Wednesday afternoon?
I did not.
It was, I guess I didn't see this back in the day when you played. So he has a great drag bunt. Pitcher throws it over, Miggy's head there. We're going to go with nickname here on this program, and the ball rolls away. And, Schaefer's breaking it down, right? Gets to the grass portion of the field, slips and falls. Now he's on the, day-to-day list with some sort of MCL. We never saw injuries like that back in the day.
Well, you didn't see him like that, and I'm not saying he did anything wrong because, you get past the base, it's three steps check to your right, and he was trying to do the proper thing. And it's amazing now, as you just said, Pete, the freak-type injuries that occur. And unfortunately for him now, it's a setback, and, once you go on that disabled list as a backup player, there's no guarantee you slide right back in. So, that's unfortunate, but yeah, it's a lot of freaky accidents.
So there's just so many of those to that point. The question is it because the players are almost too tight, muscle-bound? Or not that they're Hulk Hogan or anything like that, but it just seems like there's some odd injuries. Do you think there's more of those now today and they're going more reported? Or were they less reported back in the day? Do I dare go here? There's just less HGH being used. Your thoughts, Al?
I'm never going to say that it's attached to the uses of HGH or anything like that. I think more than anything else, I think it's reported on more frequently. The DL used to kind of sort of be not a quiet list, but a list that wasn't spoken about unless you were a star type player. So, I think with, better conditioning and all those things, yes, guys have less body fat. And maybe that's part of the issue, but I wouldn't say it was because of illegal substances or anything of that nature.
You know I'm a smart aleck at heart, right, Al?
Yes.
I had to throw that in there. Gene, your thoughts on that question?
Well, the oblique injury to me over the last 5 years is becoming a lot more prominent or a lot more out there as far as the media. And to me, we talk about body fat and better conditioned athletes, less body fat. That might be one injury where you're just you know, you want a little bit of layer over there on the oblique. I don't know. It just seems like that's the injury that I read about, and not just the Twins with Stauffer now and all that stuff, but all the major league teams have one or two guys per year that has to go at least, because that's an injury when you hurt your oblique or strain your oblique. It's not a 15-day deal. It seems like it's a month to 6 weeks, and that's a long time for that particular injury. So it kind of ruins the season.
Speaking of obliques, Gene, now we'll start with question number three. Joe Mauer really appears to be very healthy, and you can tell by the way he's attacking the game and his at-bats. And I'm not saying that he wasn't, you know, perfectly healthy in the previous couple of years, but he seems like a different player to me. How good can he be from an RBI perspective? He has 13 and is leading the team right now. And do you think he could get back to this 317 to 327 range again?
Well, hitting is two things, right? Your physical aspects of hitting and then the mental aspects of hitting. Physically, he looks like he's very, very healthy. Doesn't have any type of injury. His legs are underneath him in every one of his swings. So I think from a physical perspective, you're going to have a better, more productive hitter. That makes sense. Mentally, when I watch him play now, he's got a different approach at home plate. He is swinging a lot more first pitch fastballs. He's looking in a little bit more. He's not hitting home runs, but he's hitting a lot more gappers to right center field. And the thing when I watch teams defense, Joe, the center fielders typically in left center field, I'm waiting for those teams to make the adjustment now where kind of play him more straight up, Al, where that ball in right center field is not a double or a triple. It might even be caught. But because they're playing in the, you know, opposite field, center field, that ball's to the wall for a possible double or triple. So, but from the mental perspective, I think he's changed. I don't know if it was a conversation with Mauer in the offseason or he just figured this is what the team needs now, because a lot of people have been telling him that he's got to be more aggressive early in the count and stop trying to hit with two strikes, which he's very, very good at. But we know a lot of pitchers lay that first pitch fastball into him historically, and he just takes it for a strike. So on both aspects, I think he's made a real good adjustment.
Al, I think it's the beard. New look, new attitude.
Well, he's got a new look and a new attitude. I'm going to, on this side of that question, I'm going to stay on the mental side, Gene, just like you mentioned. I think he's walking up the home plate with a little bit of an attitude now, to where there's a little more ump or a new power mentality to his thought process. You mentioned swinging at first pitches, and not just swinging, but aggressively trying to juice the baseball. Unfortunately, to use that word, but he's trying to put some backside into it now aggressively to the pull side. So with that part being said, we mentioned his first early part of his career when he was catching, and we all had grandiose thoughts about him being a power hitter. He's changed his style. Sure, he's not catching now. He's probably more healthy. And now he's a mature major league hitter. Those his limitations. Before, we always talked about, well, he never strikes out. Well, that makes Joe a singles hitter. Now we want power, so Joe has accepted a few more strikeouts in his approach, in his game, but yet still try to get back to that 300 mark.
I want run production. I mean, homers are great. So if he hits ton home runs because that's what he's capable of, that's great. But I don't need 60 to 70 RBIs for my number three guy. I need 85 to 100 consistently if you're going to hit in a three spot. So to me, that's the big deal. If you're going to be, you know, if you're going to put Joe in the three spot, and a lot of people say, okay, he's not a number prototypical three hitter. He's probably not. But he still should have the ability to drive the ball in run scoring positions, so you can get yourself 85 to 100 a year if you want to hit number three, in my opinion.
You know, and right now he is definitely in position to start challenging to that 80 to 90 range with the way he's going. So, you know, it's like you say, run productions and run scored obviously makes a huge difference in all this. Another question, who's up? Who's leading off here?
Well, how about I go first this time? Gene's making it tough on me to come up with an answer.
Okay, here you go, Al. Torii Hunter, you know, there's an awkward pop-up back of first that Joe Mauer had to go back and make a play on. He makes the play last night, and he's looking out to right field. I've never seen Joe Mauer smile this much during the course of a baseball game. And Torii Hunter is constantly talking, you can tell. That clearly is creating an environment. You can see it from the press box. You can see it from the stands. You can see it on TV. How valuable is Torii Hunter in putting all of this together and bringing in the professional attitude that he does? and taking the pressure off guys who aren't maybe built-in leaders that way for this team?
You know, guys, that's a good question for me to start out first with. Thank you. Because I'm thinking back to, you know, being on the coaching staff when Joe Mauer first came up, and Torrey and John Jones and Doug Minkiewicz and Koski were all on the team. Joe's personality was quite prevalent. You know, that smile was there. I'm not saying he was unhappy after all those guys left, but the burden became greater when those guys disappeared. So I'm sure Torrey has brought a freshness to Joe. He does keep the locker room loose, a lot like Kirby Puckett did or Dan Gladden did back in the day, or even Gene Largen to keep the clubhouse going. But I just think, yes, Torrey has been a factor, but I also think that Joe has matured and finally started to relax and just said, hey, I am who I am. Yes, I can make adjustments if they're requiring more productivity from me. But by the same token, the guy's got pride. I mean, this guy's a 3-4-time batting champ. You're asking him to give up hitting 300 and doing it his way to try to adjust and do it other people's way, but yet he's had success doing it his way. So we're asking a lot, and I know financially people, that's how they see it. It's demanded and required, but Joe, I think, is definitely having a better year thus far because Torrey Hunter is out there. And I'm not talking about statistically. I'm just talking about at the ballpark.
Gene?
New year, new guy. I just see a different personality on the field. Like you mentioned, a simple smile. Maybe it's Torrey, maybe it's maturity, but he just seems a lot more relaxed. And maybe in the offseason after talking to the Mauer that he's got a new attitude toward the game. Like we mentioned earlier in the segment, you know, he's physically close to 100% right now, where he hasn't been for a number of years. But he is an introverted guy. I mean, I look at different personalities. He's an introverted guy. He's been the face of the franchise forever. A lot of pressure, homegrown guy. And Torrey, regardless of Torrey's stats, he's an extroverted guy. He likes to be in front of the camera. He likes to laugh. He likes to make other people laugh. I think that helps Joe immensely to take some pressure off of him. So I think Torrey's been a vital, vital positive component for that team.
Indeed he has, and you can see it's prevalent. I really appreciate the comments there on the five questions segment. I only think it was four, but we're out of time on this segment, guys. Just wailing by at a record pace. By the way, a couple more hellos coming up around the bend. We're going to bring in Justin Musil from the Elite Sports Advising company that he has. We're going to talk about the high school season and some of the prospects that he has seen so far in the great state of Minnesota. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. The truth is, we've played the song from the first week, and we're not going to not play it in this segment leading into every fourth segment of On Deck Radio, because we are not going to stop believing. When it comes to this Minnesota Twins team, 11-12, they are in third place in the Central Division. Gentlemen, is that a factor of this is a two-horse race with two of the best teams in the American League, and then there's the rest? Or is Chicago and Cleveland just not that great?
Go ahead, Gene.
So I don't think the White Sox catch the ball very well, Al, and that's going to be their Achilles heel throughout the rest of the year. They've got nice starting pitching. Obviously, Sales is a stud, but you know, defensively, I think that's going to be their wart for the whole year. And Cleveland, to me, is the team that had a very good, surprising year last year, but I don't think they're ready for prime time yet. You've got the Tigers, you've got the Royals in this division that are going to be there the whole year. And I think the Twins are a team that, like I mentioned earlier, if they get more stable starting pitching and they catch the ball a little bit better, they could be a 500 team. And I think they're the third-place team the way I see that division, you know, breaking out right now.
That's the way it rose with me too, Gene. The class of the league, obviously the Royals, you know, World Series runners up, and you got the Detroit Tigers who, if they had a bullpen, who knows how many championships they could have won in the last 5-10 years. The Twins, we said all along, or I've said, and as unison, we all think that they can reach 500, and what they've done here the first 20 games, I honestly believe, that these guys, have changed the karma, not only in the clubhouse, but, you know, Molly has shown that he's willing to leave a pitcher out there a little bit, whereas before it seemed like they never had a chance to get out of trouble or to learn how to deal with adversity out there. So I think they've got a shot to be 500, and if they catch lightning in a bottle, who knows what happens when you get to September.
Well, that lightning in the bottle comes back in July.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's your free agent. That's your trade deadline deal.
I mean, if you
get the guy that you already gave $50-something million to.
Here's a novel thought. I mean, oh, by the way, Justin Musil big timing us not taking our call. I don't think he liked guys the restricted. When you call out here to bring in the calls, comes up restricted, right, Al? You've seen that?
Yes.
Most guys run because they think it's a bill collector.
Yeah, I just go ahead and pick up. You can't run, you can't hide.
Oh yeah. So anyway, so we continue through with the Twins talk, and novel thought here is they like this rotation the way it was last year. Nolasco maybe a healthy Nolasco, a healthy Pelfrey, an emerging Gibson, of course Phil Hughes. They liked it good enough to roll it out last year. So why would it be any different? Then you add a guy like Gervin Santana, which is very helpful, of course, along the way.
Sure.
You know, they believed in this staff enough last year to be effective. It appears as though it has the potential to be effective this year. What I'm hoping and what I think I'm seeing, we still have some really rough spots like that pop-up that got in the sun on Plouffe on the pitcher's mound. Okay, so I look down press row.
Done that, Wags.
What's that, Gene?
Been there, done that.
I've done that before. It's not the easiest play in the world when you run up that mound, man.
You have to really scale the wall.
To take effect.
Well,
yes.
Okay, so explain that. He was literally right by the rubber.
Hey,
and
it's tough.
Okay, so a dumber question is the pitcher. I've never understood this about baseball. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. And as a coach of young kids and whatever, and even at the middle high school age, whatever it would be that I've been around, I get that's not the pitcher's ball, but he's tracking it immediately up. You could hear him yell straight. He had it. All the other guys are racing in from the corners to get to right where he was standing. Okay, so why does he have to run out like it's a grenade so the other guys come in and can't find it? I don't get that.
Okay, Pete. If a pitcher calls it right away, I guarantee the position players would freeze. They're told not to field the fly ball, to point to someone else.
I agree.
If they did call it, position players probably would let them catch it.
Okay, but why in baseball is that an unwritten rule why we can't let them do that?
Because they don't practice catching simple pop-ups. For some reason, obviously in high school they were the best player on their team typically, and they did everything.
Sure.
They played multiple positions. All of a sudden they sign a professional contract and they forget how to catch the ball. It's like nowadays, as a pitcher releases the ball after he throws it a home plate, it's like he thinks his job is over if the ball's hit in the air. Which, and I agree with you, Pete, there are certain chances when the ball is not hit very, very high, and guys got to sprint from the corners, it's a lot easier play for the pitcher. So I think he should take control. But, you know, the unwritten rule, as you said, the pitcher's got to run away and give the voice call that if he wants the third baseman or the first baseman trying to catch the ball.
So the other question I have about the team and really, you know, being comfortable with where they're at. Danny Santana, we touched on him with Mike Berardino a little bit earlier. When he's gone to the number 9 slot and that pressure's been taken off him to produce varying ways to get on base, now in the 9 hole, he's up to .247. I mean, and that average is climbing quickly.
There's a lot of pressure off of him, too. And, you know, he's down there in a spot where he doesn't have to think about, hey, I got to try to set the table for the team, take a few pitches here or there, although he didn't walk very much, if at all. But in the 9 hole, all he has to look up and says, okay, give me a pitch, I'm ready to hit.
They can sort of slash away. I mean, I think that's an important aspect. The other thing is,
pitchers tend to take the 9 hitter easy.
Back
in there, he can't hurt you.
Guys, back on the... I'm sorry if I can jump in because our time is already almost up. I can't believe it. Back on that Tommy Malone being sent to the minors, Gene, you sounded very surprised in your question there for Berardino. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And, Al, can you follow up on that as well?
Well, I always think it's a good idea to have one lefty in your rotation because, you know, as a former player, when you've got a three-game situation and you've got two power righties, you know, and you throw a slower lefty guy coming in, it affects the hitter's timing. I think if you got more power guys on the right side, by game two or game three of the series, you kind of, you know, you feel good about things at home plate. But if you throw a little wrinkle in there, a slow throwing lefty, not that Tommy throws 80 miles an hour, but obviously he's a lot less velocity than the right-handed pitchers. I think that's always good to make the hitters adapt a little bit. So I wasn't somewhat surprised that he was taken out of the rotation, but I always thought he might go to the pen. But as Mike said, there's a number of guys. Thompson's having a very good start out there in the pen. So if they want Malone to come back eventually, if there's an injury that occurs, it's probably best that he goes to AAA and stay in the rotation and build up innings and stamina.
Al, you got 15 seconds.
Well, to Gino's point, you know, players would rather face a guy throwing 90 to 95 than that soft throwing lefty that's 80 at 90 miles an hour. So, a little bit surprised just because those are the guys the players worry about, the slow guys and not the power guys.
Perfect. Guys, we'll see you in studio next week. Great effort. Solid work. Enjoy your weekends. I'm Pete Wagner for David Helmer. So long, everybody.